All right, 2 minute warning. You want to just get started?
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys ready? Yes? Good afternoon, good morning, how are you? My name is David Robinson. I'm a senior program manager on the SQL Azure team. And today I'm just going to give you a quick overview of SQL Azure. And my hopes when you walk out of here and go to lunch and you're sitting down and having some delicious goodies, whatever we're serving you guys here today, is you walk away with this feeling that, oh my God, I just spent the last 45 minutes wasting my time. This thing that this guy just showed me looks just like SQL Server. Why did I have to go and experience that? And if that's what you walk away with this, plus the added value that SQL Azure provides as a cloud service, then I think I've done my job. So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about getting up to speed on SQL Azure. I don't like the screen being here because I can't walk around. We're going to talk about some of the new features in SQL Azure. And we're going to talk about how it's uniquely positioned as one of the best data platforms in the cloud for any application you might want to throw at it. If you think about, and who's familiar with SQL Azure? Who's familiar with what it used to be called when it was SQL Server Data Services? Dave Aiken, you can put your hand down. So if you guys think back, I don't know, about a year and a half ago at PDC 08, we came out with the rest of the Azure platform as SQL Data Services. And what it was it was an entity-based model that was very scalable and looked very much like the table storage that Brad just talked to you about a little while ago. And all the feedback we got, and you know, everybody came up to us at PDC and they were all like, hey, wait a second. Aren't you on the SQL Server team? We're like, yeah, you know, we are. And they were like, why aren't you giving us SQL Server up in the cloud? That's what we want. So what we did was we took that feedback and we took a step back and we said, all right, so we got Windows Azure tables. Okay, that fits a specific need. We got Windows Azure blobs. We got queues. All right, let's go ahead and see what we need to do to go ahead and take SQL Server, take the best features of this powerful relational engine and expose it with all the benefits of a cloud service. So that's what we've gone ahead and done. We've taken a SQL Server platform and we've extended it to the cloud. So all the things that you come to rely upon within SQL Server, this rich relational engine and this rich ecosystem of tools with Visual Studio and Management Studio and all the different BI capabilities that you know have come along as the platform evolved, all those things, some of them are available today, but at the end of the road when we finish all the work we're doing, you're going to have the exact footprint of SQL Server that you have on-premise, you have in the cloud. So today at PDC 09, when we launched the platform, we exposed just the database. And over time, you'll hear some announcements towards the end of the year, you'll see us starting to bring on additional capabilities like reporting as a service and business intelligence as a service and data synchronization. One of the things I really want you guys to walk away with is the fact that everything we do on this team and also on the Windows Azure team is based upon your feedback. One of the big things that we, piece of feedback we received a few months ago was, hey, this is great, but there are certain features that you do and do not support. And one of those features we want you guys to support right now is spatial. And for those of you that were paying attention to some of the announcements we made at Mix, we are now supporting spatial data types up in the cloud as of Service Update 3, which will be out in a couple months. So it's based upon that feedback. So when you start playing with the platform, you start developing your applications and start thinking about what apps you want to go ahead and take and move up to the cloud, if there's a specific feature that you don't see, you need to tell us. That's the only way we'll go ahead and get that feedback and add that to the product. So what exactly is SQL Azure? What's the difference between a hosted database and a database, as we say, as a service? And where does SQL Azure fit? We like to think that SQL Azure combines the best pieces of a hosted relational database with the unique pieces of a cloud-based managed database. So what does that exactly mean? That means there's nothing to install, there's nothing to patch, there's no physical machines to maintain. We are able to very quickly iterate on the service and provide you new features every 8 weeks. Today, as of 10 o'clock this morning, we started rolling out service update number 2. And it's being rolled out throughout the entire world right now as we speak. For those customers of SQL Azure, they don't even know it's happening right now. It's just one of the great benefits of a cloud-based service that we can just continue to iterate and just get these new features out there with no downtime to you. So part of it being a relational database, we have the familiar T-SQL syntax, familiar relational model, transactions, and all the tools that you're used to using, Management Studio and Visual Studio, they all just work. But at the same time, for you to go ahead and provision a server or provision a database, there's no friction. It's very simple. You just walk up to the service and say, give me a server. And in a matter of seconds, I kid you not, seconds, that server is provisioned and managed automatically for you. It's a high-scale system, meaning that you can go ahead and create as many databases as you want. We have plenty of capacity. And we have all the capacity management plans in place to make sure that we will never run out of capacity for your specific workloads. Self-management. What is it, exactly does this mean? Well, we are Microsoft, and we do have a lot of people. But for us to be able to run these services at scale, we need to be able to automatically manage these clusters. We have all this infrastructure that we've built. So that way, like this morning when we said, okay, go ahead and take service update 2 and push it out, we do that with a click of a button. There's nobody running around with all these CDs or USB drives and trying to actually, you know, update the servers. It automatically happens. If a machine should go bad, automatically the system will notice that the machine is bad, take it out of rotation, and cause a failover to happen. So that way, one of your backup copies of your database is automatically promoted to primary, and you don't see any loss of data or downtime. And that's built into some of the automatic high availability and disaster recovery we have built into the system. So one of the things, I'm a program manager, and one of the things we typically do when we go ahead and develop new features or new products is we pick a set of core scenarios that we want to go after. What problems that customers are having are we trying to solve in SQL Azure version 1? So the first customer scenario are departmental apps. So if you think inside large enterprises, there's always these apps that just pop up out of nowhere. It could be an app to go ahead and, you know, manage, you know, the orders for the bookstore or office supplies. But there's these apps that pop up, and all of a sudden people in the department start to rely upon them. And then when it goes down, IT gets the phone call in the middle of the night and says, you know, I can't order a box of pencils. Come help me. And IT doesn't manage this application. IT's not aware of it. So by taking those applications, moving them up to the cloud, moving the database up to SQL Azure, moving the application up to Windows Azure, it starts to give IT, you know, the ability to see these applications and manage these applications for people. Also, data hubs. If you think about applications and industries that have mobile workforces, the ability to go ahead and have your data up in the cloud so that anybody anywhere with an internet connection can go ahead and connect up to it, that was another scenario we're going after. You're going to start to see, you know, later in the year, you're going to start to see a lot of talk around data hubs and secure data hubs and the kind of specific and really interesting, you know, customer applications that are built around these data hubs. And then finally, if my clicker would work, package line of business applications. So there's a lot of customers that we're speaking to now that are ISVs. You know, they would typically go out and they'd develop an application, they'd sell it to you on a CD. And what they're looking to do now is to take their applications, move them up to the Azure platform, and expose them, you know, as a software, as a service. So a lot of the things we've done into the service and a lot of things we're going to continue to do is to be able to optimize these types of applications. So let's just do a quick demo, and I hope this works because I heard that the internet connection here isn't that good. Let me actually close down Management Studio. So what I'm going to go ahead and do is fire up our old friend SQL Server Management Studio. For those of you that have used SQL Azure, you will know that the older versions of Management Studio throw some exceptions when you try to use them. You need to use the version of SQL Server Management Studio that came with the November CTP of SQL Server 2008 R2. It's a mouthful. If you use that version, You can do everything you could do on-prem with your SQL Server instance, you could do with your SQL Server up in the cloud. So if I go ahead and connect to actually one of my instances running up in the cloud, let me just go ahead and zoom in on this for you. So what you notice is I'm connecting to this endpoint, and it's a funky name, SKXZ, blah, 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 .database.windows.net. I'm about to go ahead and connect up to a server that is running for me up in the cloud. So if I go connect, cross my fingers, and boom, there we go. So now notice a different color icon. It's a blue icon up here, and it denotes it's a cloud-based database. And so I can go ahead and start to play with this and operate and issue my T-SQL and all the different CRUD operations that I would a normal database. The only difference is I'm doing it against a highly available disaster recovery proof database up in the cloud. So it's, like I said before, I want you to walk away saying, oh, that's just SQL Server, because it is. Underneath the covers, it's just SQL Server. And if we flip back to the presentation, we'll actually go into a little bit more detail about what exactly makes up this architecture. How have we gone ahead and exposed the SQL Server engine as a cloud-based service? So if you look here, that we have a couple different levels, a couple different layers. The top layer we call the SQL Server Provisioning System. This is something we have called the gateway. These groups of machines, all they do is listen and sit there and listen for TCP connections on port 1433. Port 1433 has always been the port that SQL Server has always listened on, and so we've taken that and exposed it up on the internet. So all it does is listen. When you go ahead and connect, and it says, okay, what's your server? Okay, what's your database? It then goes and does a lookup to see, hey, which backend node is hosting the primary copy of your data? It then goes ahead, does your authentication, and then connects you to your backend node. At the bottom layer, we see the scalability and availability fabric. We have a fabric just as Windows Azure has a fabric, and that manages the health of all the different systems. If it should notice a system is being overloaded, it'll go ahead and rebalance the node so that way all the, some of the busier databases on that machine will be migrated over to less busy machines. If it notices a machine is having a problem, it'll go ahead and automatically do maintenance. There is nobody actually, like I said earlier, there's nobody in these data centers that are actually managing these machines. It's all managed automatically for us. It takes care of the failover, takes care of the replication, and all the load balancing. I started to talk about this a little while ago, but when you connect to SQL Azure, to you it appears as if you have a single database. But under the covers, there's actually multiple replicas and multiple copies of this database that are kept. You have a single primary, which is the database that you will continue to operate on, and you have, as of right now, you have two copies of your secondaries. So what would happen is if in the event that the machine that was hosting your primary copy, if something should go bad, maybe it's a network card goes bad, maybe the machine crashes, automatically the fabric that we talked about on the last slide will notice that something is wrong and a failover will happen. So in a matter of seconds, one of those backup replicas will be promoted to primary, and it will automatically create a new new backup replica for you to make sure that in the event that there should be another failure, your data is safe and secure. We have this notion of something called a scale unit. And so what a scale unit is a fully redundant rack of machines. And the system is architected in such a way that it knows to put your primary and your backup replicas on separate scale units. And one of the ways that we're able to do these upgrades and have no downtime is we go and we do these rolling upgrades. We do them scale unit by scale unit. So right now, I'm not going to actually go and take a look, but I could actually go see how the deployment is progressing. And with that, what it would do is it would go scale unit by scale unit, upgrade the scale unit, and then cause it to fail over. And in that failover, when that failover process happens, it just keeps the upgrade rolling. And by the time all the scale units have been updated, the deployment is complete. So that's how we're able to continually roll out all these upgrades without any downtime to you. What about connection model? How do you go ahead and connect to it? Well, since it's SQL Server, all the usual rules apply. ADO.NET, ODBC, PHP. We haven't yet certified OLEDB or JDBC with it yet. The reason we haven't certified it yet is that there's a large amount of testing we need to do to these protocols to ensure that they will work. You know, it takes a lot for us to say that something is supported at Microsoft. Because if we say it's supported, you know, we need to support you in your application. So we're going through those process right now. And it's also important to call out that these libraries are pre-installed within the Windows Azure roles. We had some discussions with the Windows Azure guys early on about, you know, how can we make sure that any Windows Azure application can consume SQL Azure. So we've gone ahead and, like I said, we've installed those into the Windows Azure roles. Support ASP.NET controls, yeah, you know, nothing too big there. But the one thing to call out is that with SQL Azure, since all of your databases pretty much will be living on separate servers, you don't have the ability to use the use keyword. When you connect directly to a database. So there's no way for us to support today, excuse me, the ability to connect to database one and then type in, okay, use DB2. Because in order to do that, what would have to happen is we would have to take this existing connection on the backend node, bubble it up two levels, and then bubble it back down to a separate server, which is hosting that database. That's not to say that we won't support it in the future with thinking about these things. But once again, tying back to the scenarios that we talked about earlier, we're not seeing a very big need for the ability to go from database to database to database. If that is something that you guys require, I'd love to get that feedback to see if that's something you feel is important, not being able to go from machine to machine to machine. But once again, feedback. We love the feedback. We want it. We listen. So we talked a little bit about, you know, what, you know, SQL Azure is. It's just SQL Server, yada, yada, yada. I don't want to sound like a Seinfeld episode, but one thing to call out, and one of the key things that we talk about when we talk about SQL Azure is whenever we talk to DBAs, they usually wait for us at the back of the room after the talk. And the reason they wait for us is they want to beat us up because they think that, oh, my God, you're taking away my job. You're doing all these things that I do, you know. But the fact of the matter is that we take care of the physical administration of your servers, not the logical administration. So what exactly does this mean? DBAs do not like to get woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning because the log file is running out of space. They don't want those calls. All those kind of, you know, pain in the butt type things that DBAs need to do, the service handles automatically for you. The logical things, maintaining your schemas, making sure your queries are optimized, those types of you know, core DBA features, you still need to do. You own that database. You own that schema. We're looking in the future to be able to send you alerts to say, hey, we've noticed this query, you know, might not be performing as best. You might want to go ahead and take a look at it. But we're not at the point, and I don't think we will ever get to the point where we'll say, okay, we're automatically going to tune your database without you knowing it. So the DBA plays a very, very, very key role in the operation of a SQL Azure database. So we talk about the physical management. DBAs don't need to worry about replication, automatically handled in the service. They don't need to worry about failover or load balancing. Once again, those are all physical type things that are handled automatically for you as part of the service. Go forward on that. So what about deployment? There's a couple pain points that I want to talk to you about deployment. So number one, we support basic deployment options. So things like BCP, things like SSIS, things like running a SQL script. Those things all work. One of the things that don't work is the ability to take a database backup and do a restore. We understand that if you want to go ahead and take a 10 gig database and move it to the platform, you need better options, and we're working on those options. But as of today, your only option for going ahead and taking this humongous database is to go ahead and script it up, but like I said, use BCP. There's also somebody in the community that wrote an application that you can find up on CodePlex called the SQL Azure Migration Wizard. And what that tool enables you to do is it will actually connect to a database, it'll script it out, and it'll automatically create all the BCP scripts for you. So that way, it takes a little bit of the pain out of, you know, doing these database deployments. One thing to keep in mind, though, with the deployment is that you need to co-locate If your application is running within Windows Azure, you need to make sure you co-locate your application and your database in the same data center. If you don't, what you're going to see is your application will have to traverse the entire internet to go ahead and do its data access. And depending on the usage patterns of your application, you might not get a very optimal experience. But once again, it all depends on your usage patterns. That's not to say that, you know, we don't like or we don't support what we call a code far scenario. And when we say code far, we mean that the code is running far away from the data versus a code near scenario where the database and the application are co-located. There's definite scenarios where the code far, you know, code far exists, and that could be things like, I have a mobile device and I want to go ahead and access my database up in SQL Azure. There's definite, you know, like I said, there's definite scenarios and there's definite ways to work around, you know, if you want to have a code far type application, things like going ahead and doing some prefetching of data, caching data locally, using kind of like the Outlook model where it actually keeps the you know, copy of the data local and just sends while you're connected. But it's just something you need to think about. Additionally, inside Visual Studio 2010, we've introduced this new database project type called the Data Tier Application. And what a Data Tier Application looks to solve is a lot of the pain associated with the deployment of an application. What we see inside, you know, medium and large enterprises is that we'll have a team of developers, and they'll go off, and they'll work for months and months and months on this application. When it's all done, they'll take this SQL script, and they'll just throw it over the wall to the IT department or to the DBAs. And they'll say, here's the database, go ahead and install it. The problem is that this when they do that, there's no way for them to convey what their intent for this database is. There's no way for them to say, okay, we expect this application is going to need to be running on a server with 4 cores, it needs 16, you know, gig of memory, it needs all this disk space. There's no way inside of a SQL script to go ahead and specify that. But within this new data tier application, you can actually go ahead and specify policy inside the project. And when you compile it, it compiles to a DAC pack. And inside this DAC pack is kind of like an MSI for a database, if you think about it. Kind of like the CS package that I'm sure Steve talked about earlier. You take this DAC pack, and you can go ahead and deploy it on-premise, and you can go ahead and deploy it on cloud. It's a single unit of deployment. And I think, what's the next slide? There's a demo of DAC packs and stuff a little later on that we'll go into. How are we doing on time? Not good. Okay, so security model. So inside SQL Azure, we only support SQL Server authentication. We do not support Windows authentication. So that's something you've got to keep in mind. We are looking into alternate other types of way of authenticating and authorizing the users. We're looking at Windows Live ID we're thinking about. We're thinking about some of the new OAuth stuff that's going on. We're talking with the ACS team on using some claims-based authentication and authorization. But today, it's just SQL authentication logins. But with that being said, it is 100% fully compatible with the same authentication algorithms that are used in on-premise SQL today. So once again, that's feedback we want to hear. If you guys are more interested in seeing Live ID versus OAuth or token-based versus Windows Auth, we want to get that feedback. We want to you know, help you to help us go ahead and start to shape the product. So let's go ahead and do one other demo. And then after that demo, I think I will, yep, that's what we're doing. All right, we're going to have to go quick. So let's do this. Let me go ahead and connect to an on-premise version of SQL Server R2. So I'm connecting, just for those of you watching at home, I'm connecting to a local version of SQL R2 2008. I'm going to go ahead and click Connect. And notice I have a database out here called Pubs. So now what I can do is I could fire up Visual Studio 2010. And for those of you that want to try this out, these features will be available in the SU2 upgrade that's being pushed out right now. So if you went ahead and tried this at home, it wouldn't work. You would need, you know, this update to be completed. We expect the rollout will be completed sometime on Friday. But if I go ahead and say new project, and just like I mentioned, underneath SQL Server, we have a SQL Server data to your application project. So if I go ahead and click OK, select that, click OK, let it think about it for a second, and then it's creating the project, and then in a moment, here we go. We have a new solution with a new database located in it. So what I have the ability to do is I have the ability to import a data to your application. So what's going to happen now is I'm going to click on import. It's going to give me a little wizard with a bunch of steps I need to do. But in essence of time, I'm just going to blow through and talk what I'm doing. So I'm connecting to an on-premise version of SQL Server 2008 R2. I'm going ahead and selecting a database. I'm going to select my PubS database. I'm going to go ahead and click Next. What it's going to do, it's going to analyze the database, figure out what all the different objects are inside of it, and do its analysis. So when it's done, I'm going to go ahead and click Next. And it's right now, it's connected up to the database. It's pulling everything out, and it's loading all this stuff inside Visual Studio, inside my new data tier application project. So what we now have is we have a fully populated database project. And if we go ahead and look at schemas, we can see all the different tables and all the different objects that make up this database. All right, that's not too interesting. The key part about this is that when I go ahead and build this, it's going to build this project into that DAC pack, which we talked about earlier. So that way I can take this DAC pack and I can start to do things with it. One thing I can do is I can walk up to SSMS and I can right-click right on my server and I can say deploy DAC pack, and it'll take it and create me a database with the contents of that DAC pack. Another thing I can do is I can right-click on the project and I can go into properties. 9 minutes left. I can go click on the deploy tab and I can say go ahead and deploy this to someplace else. And let me go ahead and deploy to, what is that connection doing? Hold on 1 second. Connect up to, right there. Connect to this version of SQL Azure. Super user. So let me go ahead and connect up. Okay, there we go. So what I've just done is I'm because the rollout is happening right now, the bits aren't up in the production system. So what I've just gone ahead and done is I've connected to one of our test systems that have the necessary bits for this to work. So what I can go ahead and do is now that I've gone ahead and set up my deployment parameter, I can right-click and just go ahead and build this. Build started, build succeeded. And then I can right-click and say deploy. And if you look, what's happening, it's going ahead and connecting up to my server. It's going ahead and creating my database. And it's going ahead and deploying this DAC to my database. And it's you can see that one deployment was successful. So now if I go ahead and connect up to this, once again, another cloud-based database, and there's my database 7 with all the stuff that was inside that Visual Studio project. Question? How does it handle change? So in the on-premise version of SQL Server, you have the ability to do a DAC upgrade. So what happens when you go ahead and take this and you deploy it up to your server is it takes a copy of that DAC pack and saves it up in the master database. So when you go ahead and do an upgrade or you want to do a change to it, it first takes that DAC pack out of the master database, looks at it, compares it to the schema on the system to make sure that no diff happened, meaning that nobody went ahead and modified the database and that the DAC isn't aware of those changes. And then it goes into an upgrade process where it can actually go ahead and automatically upgrade it. And you don't have to worry about creating all these alter scripts and whatnot. So that's handled automatically for you inside the on-premise product. We're still working on the upgrade scenario for SQL Azure. So today you will not be able to automatically do an upgrade on a DAC-based SQL Azure database. It becomes a manual effort. We have a knowledge base article up on MSDN that shows you how to go ahead and deploy the new database and then move the data over manually. So on-prem, automatically handled for you. SQL Azure, It's coming. One more question, then we got to keep going. All the connections are secured over or SSL encrypted. So if you look at the actual TDS protocol, the first packet that gets sent along is something called a pre-login packet. And inside that pre-login packet, it specifies all the different connection parameters that you want to go ahead and connect to your SQL server. One of the things inside that is whether or not you want an encrypted connection. If you go ahead and say, hey, SQL Azure, I want to go, here's my pre-login packet, I want to connect, and you don't have that bit turned on that you want encryption, the next packet that SQL Azure sends back says, hey, you better send me a new pre-login packet with that bit flipped, because if it's not, I'm going to disconnect you. It's up to the client at that point, and it goes into its SSL negotiation, and if it doesn't respond back with an encrypted connection, we terminate the session. There is no way for you to go ahead and actually connect up without some sort of SSL encryption on the wire. One thing to point out, which this starts to go a little bit deeper, and we talk about this in some of the deeper sessions, is that when you go ahead, a best practice, when you go ahead and connect up to SQL Azure, is to always go ahead and connect with that checkbox that says encrypt my connection. Because what can happen is, if you go ahead and connect up without an unencrypted connection, SQL Azure will automatically try to negotiate with your client and tell it, okay, you better turn encryption on, just like I spoke about before. But what you can open yourself up to is something called a man-in-the-middle attack. And what that basically means is that somebody out on the internet is sniffing traffic, and when that first conversation, the first time that first packet goes out, he can go ahead and jump in the middle of the conversation and hijack it. So best practice from the get-go, make sure you have encryption turned on. And let me just go back to the deck because we have a couple more slides and one more demo that I hope to show you if I don't get kicked off up here. So at Mix, we announced a whole bunch of new features. For those of you that are using SQL Azure, some of the stuff should excite you. For those of you that are not, hey, you just got more bang for your buck. So one of the key pieces of feedback, when we first came out with SQL Azure, we had two different SKUs you could sign up for, a 1 gigabyte SKU and a 10 gigabyte SKU. Everybody came back to us and they said, yeah, that's not good enough. You know, we need to store more data. And then we said, oh, you can scale out your databases. And they're like, yeah, that's not good enough. We don't want to rewrite our application to scale out. So we said, okay, we're gonna do you one better. Let's go ahead and give you a larger database SKU. Let's go ahead and give you a 50 gigabyte SKU. And then let's start to go ahead and build some of these scale out patterns into the actual service. So the thing we announced at Mix is, hey, we have a 50 gigabyte SKU available now. You can go ahead and sign up, you know, give you a little bit more space for your application. Keep in mind, tying back to the scenarios we talked about before, you know, departmental applications, they don't really store much data. At PDC, we also announced, hey, we're starting to work on these scale-out patterns so we can actually support scale-out directly inside the database. And if you listen to some of the PDC talks, we talked about how you'll be able to walk up to a database, and if you have a 1 gigabyte database and it starts filling up, you'll be able to type in a command to split that database. And it'll split it into two separate databases, but still maintain a logical level so that you can operate over it within as it's a single database. If you're interested in that, either grab me offline or check out some of the PDC talks. There was a PDC SQL Azure Futures talk at PDC, which we talked all about this. You're going to start to see some of those features come online later in the year. If you do want to use the 50 gig SKU, it's in preview right now. You do need to drop an email to engagesa@microsoft.com and say, hey, I have an application. I want to get into this program. It'll be generally available in SU3, which will be out in June, approximately 8 weeks from today. And we haven't announced pricing for it as of yet. So that's the number one feature we announced. Number two feature we announced is something called Mars. Mars gives you the ability to actually use a single connection and issue multiple batches on that single connection using multiplexing. It stands for multiple active row sets. So for those of you that are hardcore SQL Server people, this is a feature you probably have used in the past. We initially didn't support it, but based upon your feedback, we went ahead and enabled it inside the service. Spatial, we talked about this a little while ago. SQL Azure is the first cloud-based database that is able to support spatial data up in the cloud. So if you start to think about the applications that people are starting to create that are cloud-aware, a lot of these applications are location-aware mobile applications. So you can think about, you know, I'm walking around with my mobile device, and as I'm walking, I walk past a Starbucks, and boom, oh, look, a coupon just popped up for 50 cents off a latte, you know. You could start to build those types of applications using SQL Azure since we have this native support for spatial data directly inside the system. And if for those of you that aren't familiar with it, what exactly spatial data is, it's just basically features on a map. It's nothing too crazy. It uses the same exact T-SQL syntax that you're used to using for querying data, or you're able to operate over that, over these spatial objects using a familiar syntax. Running out of time. So spatial features that we support, everything in the on-premise product, it's symmetrical. There's nothing that the on-premise product supports from a spatial standpoint that we do not. Over 70 different spatial methods, including spatial indexes. And let's go into one last demo before I get out of here. And I'll be in the back afterwards for Q&A for those of you that have questions. Let's open up another copy of Visual Studio. Pull up one of my mix demos. And let me just run this and talk about what it's doing. There we go. Okay, so what this application does is, let's pretend, and the way we talked about it at Mix is, hey, I'm in Vegas, I had such a great time, I spent all night in the casino, and I've lost all my money. And so I had to go ahead and take my plane ticket, and I had to sell it. You know, so basically I have to now go ahead and I have to drive home. But as it's a long drive, I'm going to obviously need to go ahead and get gas. So we have a table loaded up with the spatial coordinates of every gas station within the United States. So what I can go ahead and do is I could say I need to go from Las Vegas to San Francisco and go ahead and find me all the gas stations along my route. So what it's going to go ahead and do is it's going to call out to the Bing Maps API. It's going to say, okay, tell me how I go and get from Las Vegas all the way to San Francisco. And then takes that route, hands it over to SQL Azure, and says, SQL Azure, show me all the gas stations within a 10-mile radius, or excuse me, a 1,000-meter radius of my route. It then goes ahead and does that query using just normal T-SQL, gets those results back, hands those back to Bing Maps, and then displays them on the map. So these are the type of applications you can start to build with SQL Azure. Spatial will be available in SU3, which, like I said, is approximately 8 weeks from now. If you want to start to use it now, drop me an email. You know, we do have an early adopter program if you want to, you know, start to play with this technology and start to get it into your applications. So I'm out of time. Can we do like 5-10 minutes of Q&A? Anybody coming? Yeah. So let's do like 5-10 minutes of Q&A, and then you guys can go have lunch. So question up here? Which one, the DAC thing that we showed in Visual Studio? Yeah, that can go from on-prem to cloud, cloud to on-prem, cloud to cloud. Yeah, there's all sorts of PowerShell commandlets. You can do all that via PowerShell as well. Yeah. Question right there?
App compatibility when you're doing these upgrades.
So the question is, how do we manage app compatibility when we do these automatic upgrades? One of the things that we've always said inside SQL Azure is that we will always maintain backward compatibility. So we get this question a lot, and people say, you know what, I go through 6, 9, 12 months to certify my application on this version of SQL Server running on this version of Windows. You just completely ruined my day because you're going to be going ahead and doing all these upgrades automatically for me. You know, our goal is to maintain, like I said, 100% compatibility. So, you know, I guess part of it is a little bit of a shift in the way you need to think about things. But just, like I said, maintaining compatibility at the database level. We have plenty of test suites that we run for weeks and weeks and weeks before we deploy this stuff to make sure that we haven't gone ahead and broken people's applications. There's a question. One of those? Yeah, I guess I am saying that, yes. I just like to call out, I have my sneakers and not my dancing shoes on, so go ahead. We've gotten a lot better from a testing perspective from 2005 to 2008 and 2008 to 2008 R2. We've gotten better. That's really all I have to say about that. Honestly, we're not going to be changing things from that capacity. Keep in mind, we're still SQL Server. We're still the SQL Server engine. We're based on 2008 right now. We will be moving up to the R2 engine sometime after R2 releases. So that's always going to be our baseline. We're not going to go ahead and introduce new features like data types and things that don't already exist inside the existing engine. So it's if you look under the covers, there's SQL Server.exe running. It's not like it's, you know, SQL Azure.exe where we've gone ahead and made changes to the actual engine. So, you know, I would say that should be minimal, but, you know, we're doing our best to make sure that we ensure the compatibility moving forward. There was a question right there. So the question is, can you run Link Server? So today you can only, if you have an on-premise version of SQL Server, you can add SQL Azure as a Link Server, not the other way around. Something we're looking into in the future. You cannot. There has to be an on-prem SQL Server in the middle there. We do have, if you want to do some data synchronization, if you go out to www.windowsazure.com, underneath SQL Azure is a SQL Azure data sync project, which will enable you to synchronize data from on-prem to the cloud. Expect some announcements on some additional synchronization stuff sometime at TechEd in middle of June. Question over here? So what about distributed transaction support? Not currently supported inside SQL Azure. We do not use DTC to go ahead and keep all your replicas in sync. We use a custom replication channel based upon WCF that we've written to go ahead and maintain this transactional consistency across all the replicas. And it's not DTC based. Anything else? Maybe? Going once? Going twice? I'm done. Oh, whoa! Got under the buzzer. Go ahead. So is it, can you run managed CLR procs? So can you today? You can't. For those of you that are familiar with Spatial, you will know that those are CLR types. So you can think of that as the first step in us enabling, you know, some more SQL CLR type functionality in the product. Will you ever be able to run extended store procs? Never. I'll go on record saying that day will never come, just about the way those DLLs are sandboxed and how they have access to the entire memory footprint of the box. So SQL CLR, yes, with thinking about it, this is evidence of it. Can't commit to time frames, though. Going once. Anybody else going to sneak in? All right, we're done. Okay, thank
Great.
You so much.
Thanks so much, David. We'll break for lunch now, but we'll start sharp at 1 o'clock. That's 20 minutes from now.
So 22 minutes
from now. So grab your lunch and come back in your seats. We have the next speaker lined up already. And for those of you online, 21 minutes from now, we will be there back again. Thanks.